The next case on our docket is 130743 and 131046. Charles Scheigler. Mr. Hardwick is here for the appellant. The state of Ohio did not file a brief and is not appearing. So,
thank you.
You've got it all to yourself, Mr. Hardwick.
Well, thank you very much. May it please the court, the right to counsel is the most fundamental right that for criminal defendants in our system. And that's because it's the right that gives the defendant access to every other right they have in the system, whether that right's constitutional, statutory, court rule, local practice, whatever. That is the key that the defendant has to all those other rights. And that's why the U.S. Supreme Court in the Chronic decision held that the denial of counsel at a critical stage is structural error and there is no need to preserve, to show any prejudice. It's structural error, automatic reversal without any showing of prejudice. And while there may be many conflict, though there may be some tensions within this court's post-release control statutes jurisprudence, one thing is clear is that post-release control is a criminal sanction and a sentence that and a hearing to, even limited to that purpose, is a hearing to impose a criminal sanction.
Have you attended many of these resentencing for post-release control matters?
No, not many, not personally, no, but there are, I've read many, many, many transcripts of them.
All right. Do the courts generally appoint counsel?
Most districts do. There's a conflict among the districts, but most courts generally do. Sometimes often the counsel just shows up the day of the hearing, which
is... So the argument might be that because the court has no discretion, because it's mandatory, it's somewhat of a perfunctory process, so that the order for post-release control comes in accordance with our decision in Woods v. Telb, so that it can be administered, if it is in fact administered, by the Department of Corrections. And because of that, there really isn't any need for a lawyer. What's your argument to that line
of
reasoning?
The first argument is practical. The state certainly thought there was a need for a lawyer there because they sent someone there. If this is so simple that we don't need lawyers, then I don't understand why the prosecutors all over the state send lawyers to these hearings. But even more importantly than that, first of all, Chronic does say critical stage, that's it, end of discussion. But if we want to go beyond that, first of all, trial courts do make mistakes even when they have clear mandates. That happens, and that's one thing lawyers are there for.
So the defense lawyer would stop all of the mistakes that the judges are making at this point when we don't get any more of these appeals coming up. Is that the perfect world that you're in here?
I wish that were the case, but perhaps more importantly is I think what some of the lower courts miss is that they seem to think that the lawyer's job is what they see us do in court. And one thing the United States Supreme Court's made clear over the last 10 to 15 years is there's a reason we're called counselor. Our job is to explain to the defendant what their rights are, to tell them, what does this sentence mean to you? Can you go live with your mother in Indiana? Can you live with your mother in Cleveland? Can you live with your sister who has a 12-year-old daughter? All those type of questions we need to be there to ask. And under Roe versus Flores-Ortega, the United States Supreme Court said that when a defendant is considering an appeal, we have a duty to consult with our defendant and to advise him or her about whether an appeal is wise or not.
Counsel, is there a problem in this case in the sense that can this right to counsel be waived, and was it waived in this case?
It can be waived with a knowing, voluntary, and intelligent waiver following the Feretta procedure where the defendant is made aware of all of the rights he is foregoing. But here the judge just said, you want a lawyer? We have one. We can appoint one for him if you want it. And he said, no. Okay, well, you can use the standby lawyer that's over there.
And that's my question is, even were this court to agree with your proposition of law, is this the right case to be looking at it where we have a defendant who decided to go forward by himself?
Well, the state has never contested in this case that the waiver.
Obviously, they're not here.
But even in the lower court, the argument wasn't that the waiver was sufficient. The argument was the waiver wasn't needed, and part of the reason it hasn't been briefed is because there's been no argument about that. A waiver has to be more than do you want a lawyer? No, mean, that's not how you waive counsel. You have to make sure they understand each and every right they're waiving. And here, just example of something they could object to is the statute under which he was being, post-release control was being added, 2929191, on its face says it only applies to defendants sentenced before July 2006. That's what the statute says. But that statute was so poorly drafted in other ways, this court had to perform radical surgery on it to save any aspect of it. And this court now said essentially that, took what the General Assembly said before and said, no, that means after. And when the General Assembly said after, it means before. And a defendant needs counsel to understand, is it wise for me to appeal this or not?
Mr. Hardwick, can you go back to something you said at the very beginning, and that is that prosecutors are attending resentencing. Is that true in all the counties in the state?
The ones that I've seen, and I know there's, you know, the one prosecutor's office was notorious for a while for not showing up at sentencing hearings, but I haven't seen any out of.
Because part of the problem with the whole post-release control mistakes occurred when state's attorneys were not there at sentencing, the original sentencing, and post-release control was not correctly imposed. Then we got our whole history of talking about sentencing, resentencing, void, voidable, et cetera. It's a very confusing area in your understanding of what's going on right now. Is it settled because of the Fisher decision?
Well, it's settled in some, I know what the court means, but what Your Honor means by, is it settled in every respect? And there are conflicts out, and I have a couple jurisdictional memos asking this court to sort out the 10th District has its own unique post-release control jurisprudence that no other county follows. But a lot of the things are settled in most of the counties. Prosecutors don't even bother to appeal anymore when we file a motion to vacate PRC based on improper imposition, and that means that at both the sentencing hearing and in the journal entry, the trial court must impose the correct term of years, whether it's discretionary or mandatory, and explain the consequences of violation. In everywhere but the 10th District, the trial courts are holding, if one of those things is missing from one of those places, it's void, and most of the time the prosecutors don't even appeal that anymore.
So what do we do when a defendant tells a trial court judge, I don't want a lawyer, I just want to represent myself?
He has to go through the Feretta warnings, where the Feretta procedure, which is, I think it's California v. Feretta, where the judge explains each and every right that you're waiving.
The judge says, we have standby counsel here available. If you want to consult with counsel, you can do so.
Standby counsel isn't a substitute for counsel. Standby counsel has no duty to the defendant to advocate on the defendant's behalf, has no duty to explain what the rights to appeal are, have no duty to explain error. The standby counsel is there just to answer questions. And that there's very different being a standby counsel than having a duty to a defendant. Mr. Schleicher.
So in order for the court to have permitted your client to represent himself, the court would have had to go through a colloquy with the defendant and explain to him the ramifications of proceeding without counsel.
Right, yes. And this case is
Would that have to have been in writing, in your view?
No, and I think it could have been done orally. I believe there might be a court rule that says it has to be in writing. I'd have to double check that. But constitutionally, it has to be done in open court and on the record.
Do we have that question in front of us? Sorry.
No, because the Court of Appeals ruled, said no waiver was needed because there was no right to counsel. And so they never reached the adequacy of the waiver. But the adequacy of the waiver was never contested. Either you have a right to counsel or you don't, because that waiver is never going to be enough. And so it's just, if that's an uncontested fact, this waiver, if the right to counsel attaches, is insufficient.
And if we're talking post-release control, we're always talking confinement, correct?
Potential confinement, yes.
And in a resentencing, we're talking about potential confinement, and that's usually the lodestar for when someone is required to have counsel.
Correct. And in this case, it's even more important because this case is somewhat unique because the Solicitor General, the state of Ohio, represented by the solicitor and the prosecuting attorney, in order to obtain a benefit at the United States Supreme Court, expressly waived res judicata, expressly waived. And then the court, the 12th District, decided not to honor that. But I would ask this court to also explain, as part of its reasons why counsel is needed, is because Fisher creates a res judicata bar to addressing other things. When a court reverses for bad PRC, it reverses the whole sentence. Everything goes back to the trial court, but res judicata prevents the trial court from looking at other aspects of the sentence, other aspects of the conviction. And that's not a subject matter jurisdictional bar.
And you're saying that particular point is before us? Interpretation of Fisher that you just gave us right now?
You don't have to get to that point, but I would ask this court to get to that point because I'm here for Mr. Schleiger. I know this court accepted the bigger issue. The only way this case does him any good is if he can get back and get his one appeal. He has never had an appeal with counsel of his criminal trial where he put on a self-defense claim. He's never had that. His original counsel
But counsel, this hearing would not get him that, would it?
But it would. But if the problem with the Court of Appeals ruling, I think it would simplify this case dramatically because otherwise we might have to go back to the U.S. Supreme Court or go back below and litigate res judicata again. There's a 12th District decision saying.
But clearly the issue of his direct appeal of his conviction of guilt is not before that court or this court today, is it?
Well, it was before that court because pursuant to the state's express waiver to the United States Supreme Court that said you should deny his Anders claim that Anders wasn't properly filed. In fact, it's worse than not filing Anders. The 12th District didn't follow a case called Penson v. Ohio. The United States Supreme Court reversed the 2nd District for doing exactly what the 12th District did in this case.
So setting aside your client's claim, because you're really representing a lot of defendants here today, I presume you want us to follow the 3rd District, which says unequivocally in a post-release control hearing, right to counsel attaches.
Right.
Period.
Period. This court shouldn't go beyond that, but some of the lower courts have said, well, there's nothing counsel could do. And so I'm trying to, it should be right to counsel, felony sentencing hearing, full stop. But that unfortunately hasn't been the case in the lower courts, and so I'm trying to argue in the alternative to make sure that this court doesn't agree with me on that, that there is an alternative basis for
release. You'll be arguing it in the next case, correct?
Yes, and it's one other concern I have in this case is I've seen in a couple recent cases, I think Justice Lansinger and Chief Justice O'Connor have expressed concerns about ruling for an appellant where the appellee has not filed a brief. And I would ask this court if that is a reason this court is concerning dismissing this as improvidently allowed or ruling against my client, to please allow the state to file a brief. It is not fair to my client for this court to dismiss this case because the state missed a deadline. And I'm here because in support of the adversarial system, so I think it'd be a little hypocritical to say I wouldn't believe it here. I don't support it here. I like having opposing counsel. An empty chair can't make concessions the way someone in that chair can make concessions. So please give the state a chance to brief if it's going to rule, if that is this court, a concern of this court.
Is there an indication on the record in some way that they intended to file a brief but couldn't?
It's not on the record, and I know what it was. Okay. I had a conversation. It was a mistake. It was a deadline calculation mistake, and there was nothing we could do about that. I can't agree to allow the state to file a late brief. And those kind of things happen in cases from time to time. And I still want to come back. I try not to beat the dead horse on the res judicata issue, but it does. If this court doesn't agree with me on the full stop, it is important to explain why. And why this happened. And I'd also think it's important to reach that issue because it involves a claim made by our Solicitor General that this court's case law says something, that Fisher stands for something that the 12th District said does not stand for. Our Solicitor General used her credibility in the United States Supreme Court to tell that court that Fisher permitted a res judicata waiver. And I don't want to go back to the U.S. Supreme Court and say that our Solicitor General misrepresented the law, albeit unintentionally, but that's what the next step will be. And I'd much rather get that resolved in state court. And I don't think it's too much to ask for one appeal as of right from a jury trial with a lawyer. The main issue, the right to counsel is fundamental. It's what we have access to everything else. And we lawyers, our duties go far beyond what you see in court.
To sum up then, in your idea of a perfect world and the outcome of this case, we would rule what?
You'd rule that the right to counsel attaches, and that this court would point out as part of that a counsel at these hearings is not just a potted plant. There are things they can do, and one example of that is the res judicata, is that they can ask that res judicata be waived. They can argue an injustice exception to res judicata, which is one way the prosecutors are able to raise PRC issues.
Those are examples or reasons, but all you really want is for us to just say
right to counsel.
Right to counsel attaches, period.
Stop. Correct.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted, and counsel will be advised of the outcome when we've completed the writing.